and ever. In Daniel chapter 7, there was a judgment scene. Everybody see it? Books are open. There's a throne, thrones. 1,000 are before him. And I held at that time, verse 11, because of the voice of the great words which the little horn spake, I beheld even till the beast was slain and his body destroyed and was given to be burned with fire. Look at verse 21. I with the saints prevailed against them until the Ancient of Days came and judgment was given to the saints of the Most High, and the time came that the saints possessed the kingdom. Now, as we look at judgment seen in Daniel, when was the judgment? I just read it. It was at the time of the fourth beast, at the time of the little horn. Does everybody see that? Now, we're in a section of Scripture now that we're going to have to be clear about. Because as I pointed out, there are many of our friends, some of our family, who believe in the dispensational premillennialism. They say the little horn is the Antichrist, who in the midst of the seventh week, which we hopefully will get into next week or the week after, in the midst of the 70th week, breaks a covenant with the people, and then the great tribulation begins. And then the Lord will come, and he will set up his, he will defeat the Antichrist, and he will set up his kingdom here on earth for 1,000 years. Now, you can't get that out of the Bible, but that's what people are teaching. They will look at the judgment scene here and call it end times. But what does Daniel clearly state? At the time of the little horn, judgment comes upon the beast. So if you have any questions, ask me. Ask someone. Get together and talk with each other. Conspire against me. But let's get it plain and let's understand what the Bible clearly teaches about this. This will help us not only in Daniel, but it will help us in Matthew 24. It will help us in the book of Revelation. If we understand the judgment scene. The judgment scene was clearly upon the fourth beast. Who was the fourth beast in Daniel chapter 7? Somebody say Rome. Rome, thank you. That's who it was. The fourth beast was Rome. Out of the fourth beast came 10 horns. These are 10 emperors, 10 kings. Augustus, Tiberius, Caligula, Claudius, Nero. Galba, Otho, Vitellius, Vespasian, Titus, and then the 11th horn, Domitian. This is who the 10 kings and the 11th horn is in the book of Daniel. In Revelation 17, he speaks of the beast that was and is not, and it is about to come up out of the abyss. This beast is Rome, clearly. The woman sits upon 7 hills. Rome sits upon 7 hills. The beast has 7 heads, and they are 7 kings. 5 are fallen, 1 is, 1 is not, and 1 is about to come up. And he himself is also of the 7. In other words, if you look back into the 7, you can see him. Bring your jug with you. Okay. Now,
I want you to understand these things. Just don't be sitting here and looking at me, okay?
And where is the verse? Just the verse that actually calls it the little horn?
Look up here in verse 8 of Daniel 7, another horn. And then after it says another horn, it says a little one before which, okay. So please ask your questions. If I do not know the answer to the question, I'll try and find out the answer for you, okay? But remember, we're trying to become people of the book who have a clear understanding. Not only for our benefit, but for the benefit of others who may not see the Bible as clearly as we do. Okay? Now, also I pointed out last week, Daniel has 10 horns, and then 11th one pops up. And he uproots 3, making him the 8th. John in Revelation has 7 heads and then an 8th. There will be those who will say, well, where does it say Domitian, who is clearly the 11th horn, where does it say that he uproots 3? Historically, he does not. But not everything is in a vision is to be historically correct. Some things are in a vision to keep the continuity of the vision and to get you to the main point of the vision, which is making Domitian number 8. Daniel uproots 3. John ignores 3. But both points are to make Domitian number 8. And if you remember in your numbers in apocalyptic speech, the number 8 is the number of a new beginning. It is a resurrection number. It is in which persecution under Domitian of the saints began again. And as you read, and as I pointed out at times, you will see that there were some of the superstitious brethren of that time when Domitian came up and started the persecution. They thought that Nero had come back. But Domitian, under Domitian, began the persecution. So that's the point that you need to see. You will also see in the judgment scene in the book of Revelation, but it's on the beast. It's not the final judgment. It is clearly upon that beast which was persecuting the saints, which in this case was Rome. Okay? So, now that I got it clear now, if I asked the question, the judgment scene in Daniel, at what time was it, you would jump up in unison and scream out to me, it was at the time of the little horn upon the 4th beast. Okay? But please, if there's any questions, and there's no stupid questions, I know it's hard sometimes to say, well, this is going to sound stupid. There's no stupid questions. Really. If you don't understand, ask. If I think I don't know the answer, I'll tell you I don't know the answer, or I'll give you a stupid answer, okay? All right, so are we clear? We want to study the book, however long it takes. If it takes us until Judgment Day to understand the book of Daniel, then that's what we'll do. That'll be a long time, or maybe not. And then, if Judgment Day comes before, you can hear the Lord say, enter in, good and faithful servant, and listen to Ed one more time for eternity. Okay? All right. Daniel chapter 8, first 14 verses. In the third year of the reign of King Belshazzar, a vision appeared unto me, even unto me, Daniel, after that which appeared unto me at the first. And I saw in the vision, now it was so, that when I saw, I was in Shushan, some of your translations will say Susa, the palace which is in the province of Elam, and I saw in the vision, and I was by the river Yalai. Then I lifted up my eyes, and I saw, and behold, there stood before the river a ram, which had two horns, and the two horns were high, but one was higher than the other, and the higher came up last. I saw the ram pushing westward and northward and southward, and no beast could stand before him, neither was there any that could deliver out of his hand, but he did according to his will and magnified himself. And as I was considering, behold, a he-goat came from the west over the face of the whole earth. And it touched not the ground, and the goat had a notable horn between his eyes. And he came to the ram, and he had the two horns, which I saw standing before the river. And he ran upon him in the fury of his power. And I saw him come close unto the ram, and he was moved with anger against him, and smote the ram, and brake his two horns. And there was no power in the ram to stand before him, but he cast him down to the ground, and trampled upon him, and there was none that could deliver the ram out of his hand. And the he-goat magnified himself exceedingly, and when he was strong, the great horn was broken, and instead of it, there came out four notable horns toward the four winds of heaven. Out of one of them came forth a little horn, which waxed exceedingly great towards the south, towards the east, and towards the glorious land. And it waxed great even to the host of heaven, and some of the host of the stars it cast down to the ground and trampled upon them. Yea, it magnified himself even to the prince of hosts, and it took away from him the continual burnt offering, or some of your translations will say the regular sacrifice, and the place of his sanctuary was cast down. And the host was given over to it together with the continual burnt offering through the transgression, and it cast down truth to the ground, and it did its pleasure and prospered. Then I heard the Holy One speaking, and another Holy One said unto a certain one who spake, how long shall the vision concerning the continual burnt offering and the transgression that makes desolate to give both the sanctuary and the host to be trodden underfoot? And he said unto me, unto 2,300 evenings and mornings, then the sanctuary shall be cleansed. So there is the vision of the two beasts. Now, point one on your study guide, Daniel received a vision in the year 550 B.C. Remember that. 550 B.C. If you notice, it says in the third year of Belshazzar. Belshazzar became co-regent with Nabonidus in the year 553. So we can date the vision. 550 B.C. The two-horned ram refers to Medo-Persia. Medo-Persia. If you notice, the text will say the ram had two horns, one higher than the other, and the highest one came up last, or came up second. It shows the Persian dominance that came upon the kingdom of Media. The he-goat refers to Greece. That's point three on your study guide. The he-goat refers to Greece. Now, under point two, talking about the ram, it goes well with Medo-Persia. As I told you before, Cyrus was a warrior. He enjoyed conquest, and nobody could stand in his way. So around this, a ram butts heads with you. Nobody could stand within him. He just took down and took down and took down. He went west to Babylon, Mesopotamia, Assyria, and Asia Minor. North, Colchis, Armenia, Iberia, and regions around the Caspian Sea. South, Palestine, Ethiopia, Egypt, and Lydia. So we see that the realm, Medo-Persia, is described well with the realm and the conquest that he made during his time. Alexander is Greece, he goat is Greece. Verses 20 and 21 will help understand the vision. Remember, sometimes in prophetic speech, the book itself, the context of the letter itself, will explain itself. Here's a good example of it. 20, the realm is Medo-Persia. 21, the realm is Greece. Everybody see that? Okay. So the he-goat is Greece. A he-goat is rugged and powerful. And if you notice, this he-goat is running, and his feet don't even touch the ground. Do not touch the ground. And it's a good example of Alexander. He was quick, he was powerful, and he just ran over everybody. Which brings us to point four, the notable horn. Guess who it is? Alexander. That's right. Alexander the Great. If you notice verses 6 and 7, it's symbolic of the great clash between the Greeks and the Persian at the Granicus River. This is the first Asiatic War. So that gives you a little historical reference too. The first Asiatic War. Point five on your study guide, the horn is broken at the height of his power. The horn is broken at the height of his power. Alexander dies at the age of 33. Point six on the study guide, name the four horns that arose in its place. It's the same names that I gave you of the four heads that were upon the leopard of the vision of Daniel chapter 7. Lysimachus is the first one. Lysimachus, L-Y-S-I-M-A-C-H-U-S. L-Y-S-I-M-A-C-H-U-S. Lysimachus. And he was given rule over Thracia. The second horn is Cassandra. C-A-S-S-A-N-D-E-R. C-A-S-S-D-E-R, Cassandra. And he was given Macedonia. The third one is Seleucus, S-E-L-E. U-C-U-S, Seleucus, one, Nicator, N-I-C-A-T-O-R. Seleucus, one, Nicator. And he was given Babylon, Syria, and Asia Minor. Babylon, Syria, and Asia Minor. I'll give you a little time to catch up.
These kings that you did, they're all under rule of Persia, right?
No, these are Grecian kings.
All Grecian kings?
Yes, sir. They come out of the he-goat. And the fourth one is Ptolemy. P-T-O. P-T-O. L-E-M-Y. P-T-O. L-E-M-Y. Ptolemy I Soter. S-O-T-E-R. Ptolemy I Soter. It looks like Ptolemy, but a Ptarmigan looks like Ptarmigan, right? Ptolemy. He was given Egypt and Palestine. So we have Lysimachus, Cassandra, Seleucus, and Ptolemy. Of the four, only two, the Seleucus and the Ptolemy, have we any interest in. It is of these two, the Ptolemies and the Seleucids, that have an effect upon the people of God at that time. Good point, I think, needs to be brought up. Sometimes when you're talking with people, well, why did the Bible talk about the Aztecs or the Mayans or the Alaskans or the Chinese? They don't have anything to do with the history of the people of Israel. That's why the Bible doesn't talk about them. The Bible is written in the light of two facts. God knew man would sin, and man did sin. And out of that, those two lights is the Bible written. The thrust of the Bible is the sovereignty of God. The theme of the Bible is redemption. And so what the Bible tries to show is God's redemptive plan unfolded throughout the Scripture. And that's why it doesn't talk about other nations. It only talks about the nations that the children of Israel had dealings with. Okay? So when it comes up, well, why doesn't the Bible talk about this, that, or the other? Just tell them. No reason to. They had nothing to do with the children of Israel and the redemptive plan of God as it unfolded from the sin of Adam and Eve in the garden until the time that Jesus came. Okay? All right. Where are we? I got lost. Point 7, right? All right. From which horn did the little horn come from, and how do we know that it's the little horn of chapter 8? Is not of the same horn of chapter 7. The little horn comes out of the Seleucids. The little horn comes out of the Seleucids. Liberals will want to know, and you'll read it in their commentaries, they want the little horn of 8 to be the same little horn of 7. But it is not. If you remember, I told you the liberals do not want to even see Rome in chapter 7. They have Babylon, Media, Persia, and Greece as the four kingdoms. If you remember, if you go back to Daniel chapter 2, when we talked about the image. The reason why they do not recognize Rome, they do not want any predicted prophecy in the book. But clearly, as we looked at Daniel chapter 6, we see that the Medo-Persians was one kingdom. Three times it's stated in Daniel chapter 6. Law of the Medes and the Persians. So there's one thing. The second thing that we want to see is that the little horn of chapter 7 was an 11th horn that came out of the beast. In chapter 8, the little horn comes out one of the horns. Okay? So those are just two or three basic little things that you need to know to show that the little horn of 8 is not the little horn of 7. The little horn of 7 was an individual horn. The little horn of 8 grew out of one of the four horns. Okay? The little horn waxed exceedingly great and grew in power. And it does well. And it does well to describe our friend Antiochus the Fourth Epiphanes, A-N-T-I-O-C-H-U-S, Antiochus. Antiochus Fourth Epiphanes, E-P-I-P-H-A-N-E-S. I feel like I ought to get a prize or something for spelling. The word Epiphanes means something similar to deity. Means something similar to deity. When you read about Antiochus, you'll see that he was one who robbed temples. And he overran Egypt. 170 BC was his first military campaign and his only successful one. Point number 8, the glorious land. If you notice, he went north. He went south, and then he went to the glorious land. No doubt it's Israel. No doubt. The host of heaven would be the people of God. Oftentimes, stars are used in reference to the people of God. Genesis 15, right? 3. Jeremiah 33:22. Other passages of Scripture. Oftentimes, in apocalyptic speech, not always, but oftentimes in apocalyptic speech, the host of heaven, stars, sun, moon, they are in reference to the people of God. Context will let you know. Point 9, the host of, the prince of the host, the prince of the host is Jehovah God. The prince of the host is Jehovah God. Look at 25, last part. Well, let's just read 25. And through his policy, talking about Antiochus, he shall cause craft to prosper in his hand. He shall magnify himself in his heart. And in their security, he will destroy many. He shall also stand up against the prince of princes, but he shall be broken without hand. Definitely a reference to Jehovah God, the prince of princes. Point 10 on your study guide. What did this little horn do to the daily activities in the temple? He took away the daily activities. Just put that down. He took away the daily activities. He took away the continual burnt offering, or some of your translations say daily or regular sacrifice. The word burnt offering is not in the Hebrew. He took away the continual, or he took away the daily, or he took away the regular. But the idea is there. Whatever was continual, he caused it to cease. Antiochus IV was an ardent Hellenist. Remember that. That's going to help us when we get into chapter 11. His sole purpose was to Hellenize the world. During the time of Christ and after his death, burial, and resurrection, and at the establishment of the church, can you think of any passages of Scripture that may point to his influence, Antiochus' influence upon the Jewish nation?
Chapter 6 of Acts, the Hellenistic Jews.
Hellenistic Jews. And when you read the history, you'll see that many of the Jews fell right in with him. And there were reasons, of course. But Antiochus was an ardent Hellenist. Wanted to Hellenize the world. Please remember that, because it will come up on your test. He desecrated the temple. He refused the Jews to have any of their religious activities. He offered a pig in the temple. He set up a statue of himself and demanded that people would worship him. There was also a statue of other gods. The grossest kinds of immorality were performed in the temple. Jewish families who had their infant sons circumcised on the eighth day, they were put to death, the children were put to death, and the dead babies were hung around the necks of their mothers. He forbid their religion, and there's a lot more. Josephus is a good reference, but a plain and simple reference would be in 1 Maccabees. 1 Maccabees is a good historical book. Second, but 1 Maccabees is a good historical book. If you have it, read it and understand what was going on. Now, what was the reason for his success, Antiochus' success? God allowed it. It wasn't that God was not powerful enough to do it, to stop him. God allowed it. Remember, captivity, which began in Babylon, was a punitive action against the house of David. David's children had become ungodly. One of the stipulations in the Davidic covenant was that if his children became ungodly, he would come and visit them with a rod. Psalm 89, verses 30 and 32. Not only was David's children ungodly, but when a leadership goes ungodly, and your religious priests become ungodly, and your prophets preach for hire, then what happens? The people become ungodly. So Babylonian captivity was a punitive action. And God allowed all these things to happen to purge his people and to let them know that things are much better in the light of Jehovah but in the light of men. Same principle as we see in 2 Thessalonians chapter 2, verses 11 through 12. Same principle. God will allow you to believe a lie. All right, how long? What does the 23 evenings and mornings suggest? I don't know. Everybody and his brother has an answer to what it is. I have no clear answer for you. It is a 6-year, 4-month period. It does fall short of 7. And anything that falls short of 7 is not perfect. It is symbolic in this sense. Some want to make it literal from April of 170 B.C., April 170 B.C., until his death in August 164 B.C. Seems like that comes out 2,300 evenings and mornings. But notice verse 13. The question is asked, how long is this going to last? The answer is given in 14. Until 2,300 evenings and mornings, then shall the sanctuary be cleansed. Or some of your translations have the words reconsecrated, properly restored, restored to its rightful place. LXX has the word purified. Let me suggest to you, and you pursue this on your own, that it is symbolic. Chronology is not the issue here. It falls short of 7. In other words, Antiochus is going to be given just enough rope to hang himself. We'll put it in modern terms. But he's not going to be able to do the job. In 165-164 B.C., Judas Maccabee led an army. And in the 9th month, which is Kislev, our December, 25 December, the sanctuary was cleansed. He removes the idols. They get rid of all the false priests. They tear down the desecrated altar and rebuild an altar that is hewn with stones that are hewn without hands. They took the remains of the original burnt offering, if I remember correctly, and they stored it until priests who were priests of God would come in and say what to do with the altar. This happened 25 December 164 B.C. With what event does the vision end? In what year? I just gave it to you. With the cleansing of the temple in the year 164. 2 days. Now we'll get next week. We'll finish up with this. And I want you to read Daniel chapter 9, but we are only going to focus upon verses 24 to the end of the chapter. Daniel chapter 9, verses 24 through 27 is what we're going to focus on. Read it, read up on it. I want you to remember these two dates out of chapter 8, and you'll see the reason why next week. The third year of Belshazzar, 550 B.C., 550 B.C., the end of the vision was the cleansing of the temple, 164 B.C. Remember those two dates. They'll help explain what I'm going to do with it next week. That's our class. Thanks for your attention. God bless you.